Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve, the podcast from Acadia, where we take time to get under the skin of the risk, margin and collateral industry to dig deep and present topical perspectives and insights on this hugely important sector. In this special edition of Ahead of the Curve, we welcome back Acadia's own Head of Industry and Regulatory Strategy, John Pucciarelli, as guest host. John sat down with Scott O'Malley, CEO of the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, or ISDA. Their conversation covered ISDA's recent annual general meeting, the road to phase six of uncleared margin rules, and the future of collateral management. So, John, over to you.
Scott O'Malley, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Oh, great. It's good to be back.
Yeah, I think you might be, and I didn't do a full reconciliation of this using an industry term, but I think you are our only return guest outside of our, you know, Acadia personnel. So you're in your own company. So yeah, welcome back. It's great to have you back. And I think the last time we spoke was over a year ago when you came here. And that's kind of when the Biden administration was just getting started. We talked about the agenda that was on tap for them. Gary Gensler was not yet confirmed as the SEC chair. So a lot has changed since the last time you were back. COVID was still kind of, you know, rearing its ugly head. And I don't think we were back yet in the offices. Nobody was really traveling. So yeah, it's great to have you back. And I think it's a good time to kind of take a look at some of the things that we've talked about and some of the new things that have been coming up. But before we get into the agenda, I just want to know, like, how your summer's going. Is everything going well? Have you been traveling? How's it going?
It's a hot summer, hot everywhere. Have been traveling, took a little vacation, took the family to France. That was lovely. Back at it now. So focusing on phase six and some of these other things. It's good to have English football back here in London. So gives me something to do on the weekend.
Well, that's good to hear. Travel has been kind of going strong. I know I've been doing some traveling. I think, you know, my best trip, I think, so far, and I think I was in Arizona in April, but I think my best trip so far has been Madrid when we were there for the ISDA AGM. And we haven't had an in-person for 2 years, right? I think in 2020, we didn't have an ISDA AGM at all, right? Is that right?
Totally canceled.
Yeah, totally canceled.
21
yep.
Virtual.
Yep.
So to prepare for the ISDA AGM in Madrid, I went down early over the weekend to make sure I scouted out the tapas bars and made sure we had all the food lined up, thought about all of those kind of things. So it went remarkably well. It was great to have people back in person. Yeah. There's a real energy to the room. Madrid's a great city anyway, so it's hard to improve on that. And the weather was great as well. So it was fantastic. Great to be back.
Yeah. No, the weather. You're right. I mean, I know, you know, the UK, and we're recording this. It's early August, so kind of in the throes of summer and towards the end. But yeah, the weather in Madrid couldn't have been better. And really, the topics. Some of the things that stood out to me were the amount of keynote speakers that you had and so many, you know, so many of the important folks from the regulatory community were there. You know, Ross Benham spoke. You had Gary Gensler on virtually. And the range of topics, Scott, and, you know, you obviously as the CEO of ISDA, and you and I worked together, just so people know, some people who are listening to this might be good to know that Scott and I worked together for many years at ISDA together. Kind of in the early days of UMR. And those were really interesting times, but the interesting times don't stop, right? I mean, the AGM and the topic that you guys tackled at the AGM is a perfect example. Like, this stuff doesn't stop. Like, there's always challenges, and you certainly laid it out at the AGM. You talked about crypto. You talked about the LIBOR transition, all the work that you guys done, ESG, equity inclusion, and women in derivatives, and of course, UMR phase six and so many other things. What are some of the things, Scott, that stood out to you from your very unique perspective as CEO of ISDA from the AGM?
Well, always the new stuff is exciting. And the message that we wanted to convey was with crypto, with ESG, there's a lot of questions around how do they fit into derivative markets? How do we trade them? How do we think about net zero in terms of the climate issues? What is the institutional play for crypto? So we wanted to help clarify that. So the message was bringing clarity to the chaos, and there is a lot of chaos, and it's increasingly chaotic in the crypto markets. But we really helped to define what ISDA's role is going to be going forward. Specifically, we talked about derivatives and developing definitions for crypto derivatives. Really working on unpacking those key questions around how do we deal with a fork in the code? How do we deal with settlement? How do we deal with valuation? These are just fundamental important things to you when you have a 24/7 trading market. When do you take a valuation? When do you take settlement? Let's agree to those terms. Let's put it in documentation so the industry can kind of rely on that. We also look at, we've been commenting on a recent BIS request for comment in terms of the capital treatment on these products, on crypto products. And not surprising, the regulators have a very conservative approach to the crypto. And they've just recently produced their second consultation, which will close in September. But the first one was very conservative. We pointed it out that we thought that some of these products, based on their historic trading behavior, were treated a bit conservatively. And when you compared them to other volatile products like gasoline or Tesla shares, right, these would carry a heavier capital charge. So we made some recommendations on that front. The second consultation is out. They made some improvements, but they've also added some other kind of penalties. There's a 1% charge in there on crypto products. There's also a platform charge or an operations charge, like new technology. So we think that we don't think that the blockchain is that new in terms of its operational, but and maybe that shouldn't contain that charge. So we're going to make comments. We're going to get industry feedback and do what we always do, come up with data-driven analysis. On the ESG front, the work that we're doing there is, again, working on legal definitions, developing templates for the voluntary carbon markets and for sustainability-linked derivatives, working to unpack how they fit into a net zero strategy and how they will also fit appropriately into the European regulatory taxonomy for climate. So there's a lot there. We had a lot of great feedback from regulators. They, too, talked about crypto, whether it was Gary Gensler, Russ Benham, as you mentioned, Verena Ross, Klaus Knott. We did have Sam Bankman-Fried, head of FTX Global. Yeah. And we also had people like Bill Winters from Standard Chartered. So who is super passionate about voluntary carbon markets.
Yeah.
But there's also the legacy issues like LIBOR, UMR, capital rules, reg reporting, European reforms as well, which I'm sure we'll get into today.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, look, there's, you just laid out a whole bunch of high level stuff, and it sounds like ISDA has got their work cut out for them for at least the next 5 years and beyond. You know, in terms of the crypto stuff, I'm somewhat close to it from an investment point of view, not in my capacity at Acadia, but from a personal perspective. And, you know, it seems like it's forever changing. But yeah, there's so much work that needs to get done in terms of the regulatory decisions and what you just laid out from what ISDA is doing, that it seems like it's probably a fairly long road, I would think. And I would assume ever evolving, right? I think, you know, as new things come on, there's probably always going to be things that are going to need to be addressed and changed.
Yeah, we'll go to our strength, and that's convening the industry. And we have 25 crypto firms as members, so they're at the table, which is essential. We've got all the traditional finance experts that know documentation and rely on it. ISDA documentation is really good for two things. One is facilitating transactions using the standard templates and definitions and counterparty documentation. The other is to manage risk when things go wrong. So I think right now we're focused on the basics around definitions, developing good documentation to standardize definitions and those templates. But I think we're going to be evolving into other documentation, specifically counterparty documentation, and then maybe even collateral documentation as people start thinking about how they use these assets for collateral. Yeah. Even if it's just within the crypto community, standardizing that, giving good templates, reliable documentation, and certainty in the scenario of a default or a failure to pay. those are real. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. Not that it condemns the industry, but it's just something every industry should have in their documentation.
100%. And, you know, ISDA is best place to do this because you've done it already for other asset classes as well, right? So it makes sense.
We can't do it without the crypto teams around the table. Yeah. And there's the technology, you know, trying to integrate it and making sure that you're using, you know, efficient, and you recognize this is a separate asset class. You can't just say mm-hmm. this is an equity or an FX mm-hmm. definition. We'll just jam it into those definitions. Yeah. Let's respect it for what it is and acknowledge it and then draft around it to make it appropriate. Yeah,
makes a lot of sense. You mentioned our favorite topic at ISDA and Acadia is UMR, phase six. We spoke about that. And I think, you know, I was on a panel with Tara Cruz and a few others talking about kind of what we're calling the last phase. And we were kind of joking around saying, well, is this going to be the last UMR panel we do at the AGM? And, you know, we all kind of chuckled about that because we're not sure. When we look at the numbers, and I'll give you a couple of numbers that we're seeing in terms of who's going to move margin, who's coming into scope. And I think things seem to be going pretty well. Me personally, I don't think this is going to be the last time we talk about it here or at ISDA. I think you know, there's always going to be a tail that are going to need help and standards and education. And it might not be the full force of resources that we've used, that ISDA has used, and that the industry has used in previous phases. But, you know, I do think that we always kind of have to keep an eye on it because there's always an ANA calc, and you can come in and out of the rules, et cetera. So, you know, I think, you know, from my personal perspective, this is something that really doesn't go away after September. And, you know, I think we're going to have to continually remind firms about all of the resources, all of the work that, you know, ISDA has done, the work that Acadia has done, and all the free resources that are out there to kind of help firms get in. But right now we're seeing, in terms of like numbers of firms, I think we got like right now 207 to 210 that we think are going to move margin between September 1 and maybe 6 months after. And then the rest of them, I think we have a number around 500 of those phase six firms who don't breach that 50 million threshold, which was part of the relief that came in 2019, are going to be in a monitoring state. They're very close to the assessments that ISDA had made years ago. I think it's been like two or three years, I think in 2019. Is to put together numbers around, you know, phase five and phase six. And those have remained pretty consistent, which is great. But we do see a lot of firms who are going to threshold monitor. I think it's going to be pretty important going forward. If you're familiar with the rules, there is that ANA calc period every year. And you can come in at any time during that calculation period. So you kind of have to be ready. You kind of have to know what you need to do. I guess my question to you, Scott, is how is ISDA kind of looking beyond phase six? I mean, we're almost there, right? We got a few weeks from the time we're recording this podcast to September. How is ISDA kind of looking at this and what's some of the feedback you're getting from the industry? Are there any concerns? Are there a lot of wins that you can point to? I guess maybe we won't know until after September, but what are you hearing? What are you seeing? How are things going from a UMR perspective for phase six?
Well, I think they're going really, really pretty well. Yeah. People are, you know, it's events like this. It's the work that you all do. It's the work that we've been doing to message this over the past 5 years. Phase six, as you point out, is the biggest, largest, with maybe the least sophisticated. They're all sophisticated, but the capacity they have to deal with this is always a challenge. We knew that going into this. I think by the data that you shared, if, you know, at best half are going to be ready on that first 6 months, beginning September 1, then, you know, this will not be the last AGM that we talk about this issue. And we're going to continue to have people continue to come into scope. And we're prepared to support that. Over the next couple of years, we do think there's very specific things that we need to do along this journey. As you mentioned, the IM monitoring for legal entities that are in scope will continue, and we have to support that to do those ANA calculations. Mm-hmm. We do think that along the way that we're going to have a lot more explaining to do to help those who are on the tail end of this process continue to come into scope and be ready. And to, not to oversimplify it, but there are three basic things, right? There's the legal documentation that you have to have in place. There's the getting your model, deciding your model and preparing your model and being able to exchange and utilize it effectively. And then there's the operational integration. That's making sure you have the custodian accounts and all of the wires connect to where they need to be, and you've tested it and it works. So the documentation is always the first step. And, you know, if you go to the ISDA Margin Info Hub that we launched back in July of 2019, there's great resources, standard operating procedures that we've developed and worked through with the industry that can be used and help guide people. There's some documentation there that is essential for counterparty negotiations. And I'll just share a number. You had some good numbers, so I'm gonna double down on that, and I'm gonna really put some big numbers out there. So there've been over 180,440 downloads of resources from the ISDA Margin Hub since July of 2019.
That's incredible.
So that's just people consuming information, learning about it, using documentation, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And since 2021, when we started focusing on going from phase five to phase six in September, we've had 13,500 entities that are getting, wow, you know, pulling down other documentation as well. So it is a journey. They need to get ready for this. Yes, they may be doing monitoring now, but they're going to have to do implementation later. And as we go forward, not only this year, but following years, we are very focused on automating and developing straight through processing of full collateral services and efficiency that just offered that operational efficiency. They improve liquidity and inventory management that firms are going to need to make this routine and make it easy and simple and hopefully fully automated. So again, go to the ISDA Margin Info Hub. And we have a bunch of resources available that you can learn about optimizing your collateral exchange.
Yeah, that's great, Scott. Those are some really great numbers. And it's encouraging to me, you know, sitting where I sit in Acadia and where I sat at ISDA, you know, organizing that info hub, I think was a great win for the industry as a whole, because it really just, it puts everything at your fingertips. And, you know, we've done that at Acadia as well. So I think, you know, working closely with you guys, and then we link to quite a few documents on that info hub and on our own website. So it always comes down to collaboration and working together and even working together with the regulators. And I put the documentation and I'll put SIM as kind of those two big things that have, you know, I hate to use big words and dramatic words of like revolutionary, but they really are. I know it's like, it gets, you know, we get used to it because we live and breathe it all the time. But if you really take a step back and see what we've all have accomplished, especially, you know, what you've accomplished in running ISDA for these years, it's nothing short of miraculous in my view. And I hate to be over the top, but I, you know, that's how I look at it. That's an honest viewpoint of somebody who's been living and breathing this too. So, I mean, it's a great testament. And, but it doesn't stop. It has to continue, because the more and more I kind of hear from firms, they, you know, the more you hear those numbers and you think you've reached everybody, you haven't. There's always going to be people who will be like waking up to this. And the good thing is that there's been so much work done and it's all right there for you. So even if you're just starting from scratch, you know, the industry has already kind of put together the playbook.
Well, let me thank you for your kind words and compliments. And it's certainly not my leadership alone. It's been a board, and we've got a great team on the ground that have been pushing, including yourself in the early days when you were helping implement it. But all of this is driven by the great financial crisis and then the financial reforms that came after it. And, you know, being a former regulator at the CFTC, kind of implementing these rules, and now on this side, regulator proposing and finalizing the rules, and now on this side implementing it. You know, it is satisfying to kind of see the entire process through. Another big thing was LIBOR transition, and that was a big deal, and that came off pretty well. There's still more to do there as well. We just keep grinding,
yeah,
though, John.
Yeah, I hear you.
Keep
man.
Grinding.
That's it. That's why we're here, right? If everything was working well, we'd be on, you know, being on the beach retired by now. But there's still more to do.
We'll be making TikToks, man. TikToks.
Yeah, I gotta. I don't know if I should buy that stock or not. I'm still waiting. But anyway, kind of shifting gears slightly. I mean, we're talking about UMR, and I think, you know, everything we've laid out here hopefully has been helpful for folks who are listening to this. I want to shift gears a little bit to this, the PRA letter from the Bank of England. We're talking about SIM, and we're talking about the great success that SIM is. And now we're kind of getting into, I guess, some feedback from a regulator, from the Bank of England and the Prudential Regulatory Authority under the Bank of England about this letter. And if people who are listening to this don't know what this is, this really was kind of a letter that was drafted in the end of June, and it was directed, and it says, "Dear Chief Risk Officer." So it was I guess directed to chief risk officers at the major banks, and it was titled "The PRA's Review and the Use of SIM Model and Some Conclusions that They've Put Together," and kind of, you know, they talk about COVID-19 pandemic and the Archegos default and, you know, the turmoil in the Russia-Ukraine crisis, et cetera, as I guess, part of the reasons why they're looking into the things like SIM. And the two kind of big bullets that they were kind of making conclusions on was SIM model governance and a firm's capability to identify and remediate model underperformance on a timely basis. And Scott, I have my own opinion about this. The first thing, and to be quite honest, and you don't have to opine on this, you talk about what ISDA does in terms of fact-based evidence and data. And I'm sure that the PRA has data around this, but it wasn't included in this letter. That was one of the first things that I said, outside of the detail and what the things that they were looking for on this letter to improve SIM. I didn't see the data, and I'm kind of still waiting for it. And I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, and maybe you've seen it or other people have seen it, but that was my first impression as kind of an outsider looking into this. But really, we don't have to get into too much detail. I know you've wrote a DeReviews, which is on the ISDA website, kind of explaining, that ISDA is going to respond to this and kind of the back history of how SIM works. And you know, even Acadia had done in terms of how SIM performed during COVID volatility stress period. And, you know, we've gone through a stress period. This might have been the first stress period real time that SIM has gone through. And SIM performed as designed, which was, you know, being non-procyclical, and it was conservative enough to capture risk. I mean, I think there was a few things that we pointed out in the equity asset class, in the commodities asset class, that might need kind of some things to look at. But overall, the model worked, right? From our vantage point, and we have 99% of the trades going through Acadia, so we can see it all. What's your take on this? Is this something that, you know, obviously ISDA's going to respond to this? And, you know, I think the timing of it was kind of questionable too. I mean, we have phase 6 coming. Our Acadia's, you know, we haven't heard any kind of questions from phase 6, but generally speaking, when we talk to our phase 6 working group, there's no sense of discouragement in using SIM because of this letter. Everyone knows it's the standard. Everyone knows that it works, and everyone kind of appreciates that there's a robust governance framework and a back test that happens at ISDA. But, you know, what's your take on it? How ISDA plans to respond to it? And are there things that are going to happen afterwards that you may have to change, or, you know, just what's your opinion on this entire letter?
First of all, you know, whenever a regulator, certainly the UK PRA sends you a letter, or risk officers a letter, that they have questions about your product or the solutions that you've been working towards, you take it very seriously. Yeah. As we are taking this set of questions very seriously about making sure that SIM is appropriate. We have not seen data, and we would be as interested in it as anyone to look at the data and look at the concerns. As you pointed out, there is probably a concern they raised Archegos, they raised pandemic, Dash for cash. It's the other factor is who is in phase six. And I think some of the concern may be that there are some very directional firms that that could pose some additional challenges to this model. So let's address that. So let's, it's important to keep in remind everyone that SIM and the risk thresholds in the model have been implemented since 2016, inconsistent with the BCBS IOSCO margin requirements for non-cleared trades. It has been tested, as you noted, and updated several times to make sure that it meets the regulatory requirements on a worldwide basis. This is a global model that we have shared with regulators, again, consistent with the BCBS IOSCO standards, and made sure that they're very comfortable with it. They understand what's in it, the data behind it, the information, the bucketing, the risk parameters, everything about it. And we've had extensive conversations with regulators on a worldwide basis. This is only, the concern is only being raised by one regulator. Yeah. We want to make sure we address it and we think about its global application as well, because this model is all about efficiency, consistency, and conformity. And we want to make sure that that remains kind of the hallmark, because to implement this on a global basis so everybody can exchange margin in a very timely fashion, there's certain standards you want to maintain and complete. You want high standards, of course, and this one has demonstrated it. We've measured it against Russian invasion. We've measured it against the pandemic and Archegos. All of these things have occurred since SIM was in place, and we've demonstrated with that very high 99-plus consistency, it is neither pro-cyclical and it covers all of those events.
Yeah.
And it's also important to remember that since the end of 2021, the largest 20 market participants have collected over $280 billion in IM, making the system safer. So this is not a challenge to the system. We fundamentally believe that this has made the system for non-clear trades much safer and operationally efficient. Now, the governance is a big factor. You raised that. Having a global standard is critical for three things. One, calculating and exchanging initial margin. Two, validating the performance of the model, and we do that on a regular basis. And three, bilateral remediation when additional margin may be needed or exchanged, and that's important. Mm-hmm. And without these global standards, there would be significant inefficiencies in firms trying to implement this. And for bilateral remediation, firms would not be able to agree on the additional margin that they would need to exchange if they have outliers, if there were other standards or you didn't have a standard process is embodied in SIM.
That's a good point.
So
very good point.
If I could get to the model itself, it's a two-part model. There's the 3+1 or the 1+3 backtesting forms, the basis for which we exchange the exchange of additional margin if there is a SIM shortfall. And it could happen, mm-hmm. right? This is, yep. you anticipate everything, but outliers, volatility, something can change. So you're going to have outliers. We have a simple standardized, not it's simple. It's a capital model, for God's sakes. It's not that simple, but, but a standard process that can address shortfalls if there's a breach in a threshold. And then that's backed up by the, an actual P&L test to check if there are risks that are not modeled by SIM that are driving any material or widespread undermargining at SIM. So it's a two-part test, including an actual P&L backtesting.
So that's now the PRA that's addressing some of those concerns about non-modeled risk.
Correct. Right. And so we think we've got it covered. And so the PRA did produce a letter that did seem to recommend that undertaking a P&L test as the basis for the exchange of additional margin might be the preferred way to go. Now, there are some real practical implications that might make. That might not make the P&L test the best primary tool. First, it is more operationally complex. Firms would need to reconcile their trade portfolios on each and every exceedance date. It's important to remember that firms would need to agree on a mark-to-market daily, and sometimes there's variability on how firms compute discounting adjustments and the scope of the daily trade snapshot that is in scope. So just operationally complex, just to make sure that you're comparing apples to apples. Also, the P&L test is more pro-cyclical as compared to the 3+1 back testing, which can result in higher margin requirements and less predictability for liquidity. And it certainly lacks the operational efficiency that the current SIM has. You know, if you need to resort to a P&L test, it's there, it's available, mm-hmm. but as a primary, it's probably not as efficient. So, you know, I think this is a conversation that we need to continue to have. I think there might be some misunderstanding about how SIM works. And so let's look at mm-hmm. it. Let's look at the data. And, you know, we have been adjusting the SIM. I think we're on version 2.5. And so this is, you know, we take it seriously. We want to iterate it and update it as appropriate. Maybe there's a quicker turnaround on quarterly testing mm-hmm. that could be implemented. We'll have to look at that. We'll have to see what the root cause of the concern by the regulators are. But we're going to be in constant dialogue with them. We just had meetings with them last week. Okay. We'll continue to unpack this, and it should be driven by data and facts. Yeah. And I think with that, we'll be able to reconcile that. And then I guess if there is going to be a change based on this, it needs to be done on a globally consistent basis. So no one jurisdiction is kind of an outlier. It isn't, you know, kind of fully complying with the models.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Thank you, Scott. Well, it's good. You know, I guess in a sense, it's good. Just great to hear that you're in contact with them. You're having the conversations and you're going to lay all of this out for them. And then hopefully, you know, you hit it on the head, data and facts, right? No one's opposed to pointing out shortfalls or things that can be improved, but you know, if there, as long as there's data and to substantiate those things, then well, you know, you have the conversation, see where it comes out. But I think first and foremost, like you said, you kind of laid out quite a bit of detail in terms of the governance structure and the history of SIM. Hopefully after hearing all that, then, you know, you guys can kind of come to some conclusions and it'll be clear, not just for the PRA and that jurisdiction, but for everybody. You know, we look forward to seeing, from an Acadia perspective anyway, we'll look forward to seeing what some of the outcomes of those conversations will be. Well, Scott, I think you and I could probably continue talking for more hours, but we won't. I think we've covered quite a bit. I want to thank you so much again for joining us at Ahead of the Curve. Thank you. Thank you for your time. The ISDA AGM, we talked about Madrid. It's going to be where next year?
Can you say? We're going to Chicago. All right. Take it back to the USA, Midwest. It'll be the middle of May, I think the 9th through the 11th in 2023. So we look forward to seeing everyone there.
Windy City. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. I was just there recently and there's no shortage of food and pizza and all sorts of good stuff and fun. So I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully we'll see more folks there. I guess you can go to the ISDA website to get more details on that. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, John. Really appreciate it. I'm already looking for my three-peat performance on the podcast.
We're
going to
get you back here. Don't worry about it. I'm sure I'll be calling you in a couple of months. Thanks again, Scott. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Acadia's John Pucciarelli speaking to Scott O'Malley, CEO of the International Swaps and Derivatives Association. Thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. We'd like to know what you think, so please do get in touch and share your thoughts. And you can find out more about Acadia by going to acadia.inc. But until next time, it's goodbye.